One should know the Acharya as myself and never disrespect him in any way. One should not envy him, thinking him an ordinary man, for he is the representative of all the demigods. Purport. This is a verse from Srimad Bhagavatam 11.17.27, spoken by Lord Krishna when he was questioned by Uddhava regarding the four social and spiritual orders of society. The Lord was specifically instructing how a brahmachari should behave under the care of a spiritual master. A spiritual master is not an enjoyer of facilities offered by his disciples. He is like a parent. Without the attentive service of his parents, a child cannot grow to manhood. Similarly, without the care of the spiritual master, one cannot rise to the plane of transcendental service. The spiritual master is also called Acharya, or a transcendental professor of spiritual science. The Manusamhita 2.140 explains the duties of an Acharya, describing that a bona fide spiritual master accepts charge of disciples, teaches them the Vedic knowledge with all its intricacies, and gives them their second birth. The ceremony performed to initiate a disciple into the study of spiritual science is called Upaniti, or the function that brings one near to the spiritual master. One who cannot be brought near to a spiritual master cannot have a sacred thread, and thus he is indicated to be a Shudra. The sacred thread on the body of a Brahmana, Kshatriya, or Vaishya is a symbol of initiation by the spiritual master. It is worth noting, if worn merely to boast of high parentage, it is worth nothing if worn merely to boast of high parentage. The duty of the spiritual master is to initiate a disciple with the sacred thread ceremony, and after this samskara, or purificatory process, the spiritual master actually begins to teach the disciple about the Vedas. A person born a Shudra is not barred from such spiritual initiation, provided he is approved by the spiritual master, who is duly authorized to award a disciple the right to be a Brahmana if he finds him perfectly qualified. In the Vayu Purana, an Acharya is defined as one who knows the import of all Vedic literature, explains the purpose of the Vedas, abides by their rules and regulations, and teaches his disciples to act in the same way. Only out of his immense compassion does the personality of Godhead reveal himself as the spiritual master. Therefore, in the dealings of an Acharya, there are no activities but those of transcendental loving service to the Lord. He is the supreme personality of servitor Godhead. It is worthwhile to take shelter of such a steady devotee, who is called Ashraya Vigraha, or the manifestation or form of the Lord whom one must take shelter. If one poses himself as an Acharya, but does not have an attitude of servitorship to the Lord, he must be considered an offender, and this offensive attitude disqualifies him from being an Acharya. The bona fide spiritual master always engages in unalloyed devotional service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. By this test, he is known to be a direct manifestation of the Lord and a genuine representative of Sri Nityananda Prabhu. Such a spiritual master is known as Acharya Dev. Influenced by an envious temperament and dissatisfied because of an attitude of sense gratification, mundaners criticize a real Acharya. In fact, however, a bona fide Acharya is non-different from the personality of Godhead, and therefore to envy such an Acharya is to envy the personality of Godhead himself. This will produce an effect subversive to transcendental realization. As mentioned previously, a disciple should always respect the spiritual master as a manifestation of Sri Krishna, but at the same time one should always remember that a spiritual master is never authorized to imitate the transcendental pastimes of the Lord. False spiritual masters pose themselves as identical with Sri Krishna in every respect to exploit the sentiments of their disciples, but such impersonalists can only mislead their disciples, for their ultimate aim is to become one with the Lord. This is against the principles of the devotional cult. The real Vedic philosophy is Achintya Bheda Bheda Tattva, which establishes everything to be simultaneously one with and different from the personality of Godhead. Srila Raghunath Das Goswami confirms that this is the real position of a bona fide spiritual master and says that one should always think of the spiritual master in terms of his intimate relationship with Mukunda, Sri Krishna. Srila Jiva Goswami in his Bhakti Sandarbha 2.13 has clearly explained that a pure devotee's observation of the spiritual master and Lord Shiva as being one with the personality of Godhead exists in terms of their being very dear to the Lord, not identical with him in all respects. Following in the footsteps of Srila Raghunath Das Goswami and Srila Jiva Goswami, later acharyas like Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur have confirmed the same truths. In his prayers to the spiritual master, Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur confirms that all the revealed scriptures accept the spiritual master to be identical with the personality of Godhead, because he is a very dear and confidential servant of the Lord. Gaudiya Vaishnavas therefore worship Srila Gurudev, the spiritual master, in the light of his being the servitor of the personality of Godhead. In all ancient literatures of devotional service, and in the more recent songs of Srila Narottam Das Thakur, Srila Bhaktivinod Thakur, and other unalloyed Vaishnavas, the spiritual master is always considered either one of the confidential associates of Srimati Radharani or a manifested representation of Srila Nityananda Prabhu.
Acharyam mangvijaniyan navamain manyeta karhichit namartya buddha suyeta sarva deva mayo guru. Om Jnanati Nirandhasya Gyanam Jana Shalakaya Chakshur Nilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Nama Srishtam Manamapi Shakti Putram Atrasvarupam Rupam Tasya Agrajam Rupurim Maturim Goshtavatim Radha Kundam Girivaramaho Radhika Madhavasham Prapto yasya pratita kripaya shriguram tam natasmi. Vandeham shriguru shriyata phalakamalam shrigurun vaishnavascha. Shri rupam sagraja tam sahagana raghunatam vitam tam sajivam. Sadvaitam savadhutam parijana sahitam krishna tetanya devam. Shri radha krishna padan sahagana lalita shri vishakhan. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. The reason that I'm speaking on this verse this morning is because I received a comment via email on a comment that I had made while quoting this verse in a recent lecture. I commented that Sri Krishna, while describing to Uddhava about the duties of a brahmachari, had described the position of the acharya as being non-different from himself. In this verse, Krishna says, acharyam mang vijaniyan, one should know very well that the acharya is me. That's the literal translation. Yeah, Srila Prabhupada translates the same way. One should know the acharya as myself. Of course, that statement is qualified in the purport by saying that he is to be understood as stated to be as God means as good as God in as much as very dear to Krishna. Not the same in all respects. As the Mayavadis often like to quote, Guru Brahma, Guru Vishnu, Guru Deva Maheshvara. Guru Sakshat Param Brahma, Tasmat Sri Gurave Namaha, Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha. The Mayavadis like to quote this, that Guru is Brahma, Vishnu and Shiva. He's directly the supreme absolute truth. We translate it Brahma as absolute truth, although there's no real term in English. Absolute truth is something that is a term that came out of Greek philosophy. Therefore, I offer my obeisance. But then the Mayavadis, they also think, I'm also Param Brahma. So, I'm offering respects to myself. I'm bowing down in the temple, offering respect to myself. Actually, this Guru Brahma, Guru Vishnu, this verse is quoted in Garga Samhita also, by Krishna, in referring to Durvasa. It's an amusing account of Krishna's, the gopis have to go, and Krishna tells them to bring all milk and butter and so many items to Durvasa. And in the course of referring to Durvasa Muni, Krishna speaks this, Guru Brahma, Guru Vishnu. And he says of Durvasa Muni that he's completely self-controlled and never eats very little, and they brought so much ghee and so many things. Durvasa ate it all. Oh, they asked, how will we cross the Yamuna to reach him? And Krishna said, you have to say this. Then the Yamuna will open and you can go. Then so they went there and they brought all this, and Durvasa ate it all. Although Krishna had said that he eats very little. He's a great yogi. He eats very little. And then they asked, how will you go back? How will we go back now across the Yamuna? And Durvasa said, you say this, Krishna is a great brahmachari, and then you can go back. The river will open again. So it's some amusing exchanges there. But anyway, that's the point here is that I had stated that in the narration in Srimad Bhagavatam, where Krishna describes the Acharya, he's not describing great Acharya like Ramanuja Acharya, Madhva Acharya. We also call Shankara Acharya, although some Vaishnavas object to that. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in Chaitanya Charitamrita refers to him as Acharya also. And Nimbaka Acharya, Vishnu Swami, and so many Acharyas in their lines, and what to speak of the great Gaudiya Acharyas. So Krishna is, in the context of his speaking this, is not speaking about someone who establishes Vaishnavism within this world by his tremendous preaching activities, but he's speaking about the what would generally be the forest acharya, living in the forest. And living in the forest means generally when it's said that the rishis live in the or the boys, they live in the forest gurukul, and they go begging in the village. That means they'd be in the forest, but not deeply in the forest, because they'd come out every day and beg for alms, bhiksha. So we have the picture of Guru generally living with, in most cases, would be with his wife and some boys in the forest with him. And that's the Gurukul. He teaches them. So that was the point I was making, it's not necessarily the very great acharya who's to be or famous acharyas, but every acharya is to be accepted as the Supreme Lord. And within Vedic culture, one who teaches anything is to be highly respected, whether it's dancing, how to play musical instruments, or whatever one teaches, that is considered a highly respectable position. Up until recently, the position of teacher was considered, later the British introduced their own style of education. But the teachers were highly respected. That the whole culture that of knowledge was considered so valuable in Vedic culture. So anyone who imparts knowledge is to be highly respected. Akinchan Krishna Prabhu, who's from rural South India, he told me in his childhood, the children would, like, run when they saw the teacher coming. They would run toward him and all, like, be in competition to carry his bag and this. And I've seen in Dhaka University in Bangladesh. This is about around 1980. The students will touch the feet of the professor. Probably that still goes on in North India, probably at Banaras Hindu University, I would imagine. Very cultural place. Probably in Allahabad, no?
I graduated from BHU.
No one touched the feet even at that time.
The arts and all, few, but depleting.
Yeah. Going down, yeah, everywhere due to this nasty modern society. So the idea is that anyone who teaches anything is to be respected as good as God, because actually they used to teach the Vedic knowledge is actually coming from God. So that links one with the Supreme, whether understood as personal or impersonal, that links one with the Supreme. Maybe not, certainly one who teaches Vedaischa Sarvera Hameva Vedyaha, that all knowledge, all the Vedas are meant for understanding Krishna, that is an acharya in the true sense of the term. That's a phrase that Srila Prabhupada uses around this section of the Chaitanya Charitamrita in one of the purports. Actually, all these purports are from Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, and Srila Prabhupada has kindly In this section, they're from Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. In this section of Chaitanya Charitamrita, Srila Prabhupada has kindly given them to us in simple English. Otherwise, they're very difficult to read, and most Bengalis couldn't understand what Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's language. It's too difficult for them, even though it's in Bengali. Yeah, because they're imparting that knowledge, that means the knowledge of music, the knowledge of dancing, the knowledge of art, architecture, nuclear physics, it's all there in Vedic knowledge. And very deep knowledge of the science of sound, which the Western world doesn't even have any discipline for studying sound in the way that a very essential subject of knowledge in Vedic understanding. The different subtle levels of sound and their effects. And There's no such no such conception in the Western world. Even the science of linguistics, that was discovered by Westerners studying Sanskrit, and then they applied that to their own language. This whole philology, linguistics, there was no such idea of any such discipline until in the Western world, until the Westerners started to study Sanskrit. All this knowledge links one with the Supreme. It's not that music, you have a jazz masterpiece. What exactly is a masterpiece? But it's something which appeals to the... In the Western world, a musical masterpiece is something that appeals to their... there's a word describing music, but I can't remember the term. Dissyncophatic or something, I can't remember. But it means that it's... The very fact that it... it breaks the rules of music is appealing to them. It's like the modern art. The fact that there's no it's unsystematic and just an expression of the highly disturbed minds of people like Picasso. I mean, expressing his mind and what it's just his madness actually. And his despair, his lack of yoga, his lack, the absence of his being connected with the superior energy, spiritual energy. It's all that's what modern art is. People's expressing their psychic disorder, and other people who are also, I didn't say psychological, I said psychic, but you could say both also. Psychic is deeper than psychological. So people who are similarly psychically disordered, they're not yogis, they're not linked, they don't have any link with the Supreme, they also appreciate such mad masterpieces. Expressions of madness. But Vedic music links one's consciousness with the Supreme. So all Vedic culture means, we say Vedic knowledge, although it's a... If we say, we say Vedic knowledge for the... That's an English term, but in Sanskrit, we just say Veda, that's all. You may say Vedic Jnanam, just to distinguish from, what would we say, Pakhandi Jnana, but actually Ved means Jnana, Ved means knowledge, and something else that's presented as knowledge, it's not really Veda at all. That way Buddhism is rejected, even though they took so many concepts from the Vedas. Of course, Buddha himself didn't speak so much philosophy, but later on, so many philosophers came up in the name of Buddhism. Just like Jesus didn't speak much philosophy, and later on, so many people came up and tried to make some philosophy. Didn't do a very good job, but they tried. So Ved means knowledge, and one knowledge means spiritual, because the material situation is one of non-knowledge. Agyana timirandhasya gyananjana shalaka chakshurin militam yena tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha. We are in the situation of non-knowledge, material existence. Means a situation of non-knowledge. We offer respect to the Guru because he gives the knowledge by which we can come to our actual situation of being situated in truth. Knowledge means truth. Non-knowledge means falsity. This whole material situation, maya, means that which is false, that which is not. So knowledge means truth. And non-knowledge is ignorance. In English we have the terms knowledge and ignorance. In Sanskritum there's vidya avidya. It more strikingly presents what is ignorance. It's the absence of vidya, which means knowledge. So knowledge means truth. And one who imparts this is called a guru or acharya. Guru means one who removes darkness, one who gives knowledge. We're in the darkness of ignorance. So, anyone who does that is a representative of Krishna. There are different levels of acharya. So one who teaches dancing according to the Vedic system is also called an acharya. But in the true sense of the term, acharya means sakshad haridvena samasta shastraya uktas tatha bhavyata eva sadbhi kintu prabhoya priya eva tasya vandegaroshi charna arvinda, one who is very dear to Krishna and gives knowledge of Krishna. But that culture is there to respect within Vedic culture. Anyone who gives knowledge, because that is either materially or spiritually, that is a great asset for a person to have knowledge. That's the improvement of their existence. Even in India, there's the sister, the truck driver and the cleaner. The cleaner means the person. Maybe a young boy who goes with the driver, cleans the vehicle and gradually learns how to drive. And when the driver dies of AIDS, which they generally do because they have every day a different wife. They go from one place to another and have a prostitute at each place. So then the cleaner takes over as the driver. I don't know how it works exactly. Haven't made a sociological study of it all, but he can say the driver is his guru, teaching him to be respected. I mean, that's not what Krishna meant when he said acharyam mam vijaniyam, but that culture is there to respect that person, and you can't say anything bad about that person in his presence because. It's considered just godly. The person is as good as God to him. That's the that culture is there. So even a guru who is not of the status of the great acharyas, the famous acharyas, but who gives spiritual knowledge, even if he gives to one person, he's an acharya. And of course, there have been gurus who have been gurus just of one person, but that one person has saved. Well, this is particularly the case of Srila Gaurakishore Das Babaji Maharaj. It's better to have who can be qualified to have such a disciple as Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, but to be the guru of one such disciple is more of a contribution to the world than having thousands and thousands of not very serious followers. We shouldn't be sometimes devotees say, well, you know, in our movement we don't have so many followers, and these some Sri Sri or Hugging Wali so-called guru, they have so many. When they come, I saw this Hugging Wali, that means this so-called Amma. She's She came to London and she, like 20,000 people came to see her. Someone else told me 20,000 people in, where was it? Somewhere in Berlin. I was just in Berlin. 20,000 people came to see this Sri Sri, and he charges everything. For everything he charges a lot. He must have made a phew. Yeah, probably charged like 500 euros or something.
In Facebook, I saw one picture in which he is posing with a flute like this.
And oh, go and just, you buy one gun and shoot the rascal. Such a rascal. Posing as with a flute to imitate Krishna. Such a rascal.
He charges 50,000 rupees, Maharaj, to touch his feet.
50,000 rupees to touch his feet. It's all business, huh? He's a smart guy. He's making lots of money. Must be. So, people say, well, we don't have so many followers. So, you see, we should study their techniques and emulate their techniques so we can have so many followers. But any one of you is better than all of the... I'm not saying that any of you are on the level of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, but any one of you is far greater than all those so-called followers. But they say have so many followers, but there aren't any followers because there's nothing to follow. They don't give them any. There's no commitment, or there's no question of love between the guru and the disciple, because there's love means when there's an exchange, or when one sincerely desires to benefit another, and the disciple is very sincere to receive that, and it's all in relationship to Krishna, then there's love between guru and disciple. But it's some business deal, some business exchange in which the guru gets money and prestige, so-called guru, and the disciples, they're also, what are they, how to live peace, relax. That's what they told me in Berlin. His whole message is that people should learn to relax. Yeah, we can teach you to relax. Give one good heavy punch right on the chin and knock you right out, and then you can relax. Or boot in the face, as Srila Prabhupada used to say. This is our, what is your message? Our message for you is this. You're not qualified. This is the best message for you. You're not qualified for any other message at this stage. First you take this, then we'll see some other, then we'll see some other message. So even one neophyte follower who has some sincerity to actually follow and become advanced, one who's a neophyte, they can also become advanced. They don't have to stay a neophyte forever. Jaha komal shraddha shei kanishta jan krame krame teho hoibe utam. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said that one who has very pliable faith, weak, soft faith, they're called kanishta, or neophyte devotee. But they also gradually can come to the topmost level. So one who doesn't progress, then we can't really even call them kanishta adhikari. They're not really devotees at all if they don't make progression. So yeah, even that was my point I was making in the lecture, that even someone who's, we could say an ordinary guru, although there's no such thing as an ordinary guru, but we could, or standard in Vedic culture, just like in modern Hinduism, it's standard that guru means the most shameless cheater. But in actual Vedic culture, guru means highly respectable, not just because they have a position, but everything about them warrants or engenders in others respect. The Brahmins, they're to be respected, but not just because they have some label called Brahmin, but their whole existence, everything. Sattva sangshuddhihi, they are fixed. Sattva sangshuddhihi means fixed in existence. They're fixed in their existence. They are being themselves. They're in yoga. They're in contact with themselves. They're not bipolar. Everyone in this world is bipolar because everyone's Atma, but they're trying to be something else. They're not even sure what they're trying to be. So it's everyone in this world is insane in this way. But one who has achieved yoga, samatvam yoga uchate, one who is steady and fixed in his position and in equilibrium, such a person has achieved yoga. So, for want of a better term, or just for the sake of this particular discussion that I'm discussing, we can say that an ordinary guru is as good as Krishna, and that is that's what Krishna states in the Bhagavatam. So, and that's the point I made. Now, the devotee from Ireland, if you remember, I started by saying, no, I didn't say he was from Ireland, but I gave the lecture in Ireland, and he wrote to me saying that, well, in the purport, Srila Prabhupada speaks about unalloyed devotional service. So how can he, I suppose that the devotee who wrote this to me was making a comment or pointing out that I was making a point that, but in the purport, Srila Prabhupada explains it differently. Well, actually, this verse, which is quoted here in Chaitanya Charitamrita, is quoted in a somewhat different context to that in which Krishna spoke it in the Bhagavatam. Krishna spoke this verse about the Acharya in the discussion of the Vanashram system, the duties of Brahmacharis, how the Brahmacharis have to surrender to an Acharya. And here in Chaitanya Charitamrita, the term Acharya, this verse is quoted in the explanation of the, particularly of the Gauriya Vaishnava Acharya, who was a representative of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So any real Acharya, the essence is the same. They must be a devotee of Krishna. A Vaishnava Guru na syat, Vaishnava Svapacha Guruhu. Even if one is Shadkaramanipano Vipra Mantra Tantra Vishara Daha, even if one is very learned in the all different Vedic rituals and procedures and knowledge, if he's not a Vaishnava, he's not fit to be a guru. But if one is from a completely uncultured background but is a Vaishnava, such a person is a guru. So that point is being stressed here. Although in Vedic culture, in the general broader culture, all the gurus and brahmanas, they were not all Vaishnavas. They might have been Shaivas or impersonalists, but still they are considered by their, particularly by their disciples, to be as good as God, even though the disciples might not have a very clear idea of who God is, and going to a non-Vaishnava guru, they wouldn't get a very clear idea either. Interestingly, this Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur states that Sandipani Muni was the guru of Krishna, was a Shaiva, not a Vaishnava. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. And even today we see that there are respectable gurus who are Shaivas, and as much as could be hoped for in the modern day, they're maintaining the Vedic tradition. I don't very much like those Actually, I didn't even watch them all. I just saw the one from Dwarka, that Chardham CDs of myself. I didn't like the way it was produced in the end. But there's one passage in there in Dwarka where I'm walking with the acharya at the school for the Brahmin boys in Dwarka. So that Gurukul that's going under the and the whole Dwarka temple that's all run by the coming under the Shankara Sampradaya. So and he has the Shaiva Tilak, but I mean he's very cultured, real Brahmin. Srila Prabhupada said that about the also. Srila Prabhupada was very pleased when the Sri Vaishnavas, they installed the deities of Radha, Madan Mohan, Gornitai, Jagannath, Subhadra, Baladev. Srila Prabhupada had them install them in Hyderabad, and Srila Prabhupada said, yeah, they're real Brahmanas. He was very pleased with them. So I spoke with several of the Brahmanas there in Dwarka, and they're all, everyone respects him. He's the guru of all of the, you know, generation by generation. His guru was the guru of the older generation. His father was the guru of the older generation. He's the guru of the present generation, and his son will be the guru of the next generation. So they all restrain. So they say, oh, he's a very, very strict. They don't say in a disparaging way, in a very appreciative way. They say, very, very strict. So he trains them all very nicely. He's not a Vaishnava per se. I mean, everyone in Dwarka is a Vaishnava, even the so-called impersonalists. They're all devotees of Dwarkadish. He's respected as good as God. So that was the point I was making. Whereas here, yeah, Jodopi Yama Guru Chaitanya Radas Tatapi Janeho Taha. Actually, I have to look and see. A long time since I saw this. She Chaitanya Prakash. So it's in this context. So it's quoted in, this verse is quoted in a somewhat different context and giving the. One very important point to understand when studying Shastra is that words are used in different contexts. And if we don't understand that, we're going to really misunderstand. And how to understand the words in various contexts makes a huge difference to our whole understanding. So the word acharya in the true sense of the term. Srila Prabhupada uses that. I mean, there's in the conventional sense of the term, anyone who teaches any knowledge is considered an acharya, and in Vedic culture is respected as good as God. But in the true sense of the term, an acharya is a Vaishnava, pure Vaishnava. So. Many of the discussions and misunderstandings that we have in our modern Krishna consciousness society come about because of the lack of subtlety that of that Western education imparts, the idea that because something is true, something which is different to it cannot be true, also true. So that's this again, this achintya bheda bhed. Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That's an indisputable fact, but not in Vrindavan. The residents of Vrindavan, they don't see him as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In Vrindavan, he's Jashomati Nandana Brajavara Nagara Gokula. What is it? Gokula Ranjana Kana. They don't think of him as the Supreme. He is, but he's not. And who's the greatest Vaishnava? Radha, Nanda Maharaj, Yashoda Rani. You'll never find them saying he's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Who could be greater Vaishnavas than them? So it's a contradiction. Is it? Yeah, it's a contradiction. But is it true? Well, I mean, think Nanda Maharaj is wrong? Actually, Krishna is Nanda Nandana, Yashoda Nandana, and some people think he's God. If we want the highest, the highest understanding is not to understand him at all. It's just that, you know, not to sit around talking about whether he's God or not, but to go and massage him or steal his lunchbox or have your clothes stolen by him or some such thing. Don't take that out of context. But that the highest understanding is not to think, sit around thinking what, you know, how to understand it at all. There's just spontaneous loving service to him. So all these facts are, it's true. They're all simultaneously true. But if we don't understand Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, then we're rascals. Is Nanda Maharaj a rascal? No. No, there's no question of him being. So and we see that devotees, they'll take one quotation from Srila Prabhupada and say, yeah, Srila Prabhupada said this, and they find something else somewhere else. And then they can't understand how is Prabhupada contradicting himself. And it's this... this so-called scientific approach that one thing is... The whole of science is all hung up for the last 100 years or so on is it a wave or is it a particle? They should just study Prabhupada's books and then they'd understand it. If it's a wave, it can't be a particle. If it's a particle, it can't be a wave. And what's the Vedic reply to that? Why not? But it can't be a wave and a particle. Why not? Well, they have completely different properties. Well, so what? That's all. What I said was not incorrect, even though Srila Prabhupada refers to the Acharya in this purport as one who always displays the activities of unalloyed devotional service. So that's true. And what I said was also true, that even what may conventionally be referred to as an ordinary guru is also considered as good as God. So both things are true. Another point, as I saw your video yesterday, you gave about, what is that, the guru as a truth conductor. Just like you have a lightning conductor, the lightning is attracted to that and it goes through that. And actually, the lightning conductor, the point is to neutralize all the. Well, that's a lightning conductor, but anything, copper wire is supposed to be the best conductor. Actually, I think something's better than that, but it's more expensive. Silver, maybe, something like that. But it's too expensive. Maybe platinum, I don't know. But copper is the standard because you can transmit electricity over a long distance with insignificant loss of power. There is some loss, but not much. So we're told. So, guru is a conductor of truth. And you made the statement that even for 2 seconds if someone says the truth, he's a guru. That should be qualified, that statement. Because guru is one who... specifically the definition of Acharya is Archinoti Yashastrani. That's the three symptoms of an Acharya. Actually, two of them cover the point of his own personal behavior. Archinoti Yashastrani. What's the next line? Achari stapyati api. Swayam acharate yasmat. Actually, three lines. Swayam acharate yasmat. Acharyaste nakirtitaha. One who lives and acts and teaches Vedic knowledge by his behavior is known as an acharya. Now, the guru may appear in many forms. We find in the Bhagavatam, how many is that? 32 gurus? And the pigeon? 24 gurus, that's right. Yeah. The pigeon is a guru. The pigeon doesn't think I'm a guru. But actually, that's a very intelligent person can find their guru everywhere. Srila Prabhupada, when he was publishing Back to Godhead in India in the 1940s or 1950s. And one librarian in Delhi said to Srila Prabhupada, why don't you write books? That's a more lasting contribution than a magazine. And Srila Prabhupada recognized, my guru is speaking. This is my guru speaking. Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur said about one of his disciples who passed away very young after just a short time, Brahmachari, after living in the mountain, Bhagavat Jana Ananda Das. Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur said that Bhaktivinoda Thakur came again, but I did not recognize him. He said of his own disciple. So, a very intelligent disciple can find his guru manifest in many places, many people, many forms, many situations. And if someone speaks the truth, they may... They're a conductor of truth. And in fact, from what I've heard, that Krishna consciousness was widely spread all over the Soviet Union by the devotee who Srila Prabhupada, after just instructing him briefly, Srila Prabhupada initiated him and then just left him without further instruction. And that devotee went and spread Krishna consciousness all over the Soviet Union. But as I have heard, and this is not confirmed, I've heard it from more than one person. He also, devotee, while teaching others about Krishna consciousness, he also had quite a few liaisons with, if you know what the word liaison means, then it's often used in the context of sexual activity. So... he wasn't acting as an acharya, but Prabhupada acted through him anyway. So we can say the guru principle is at work, just like Srila Prabhupada comments about whenever we see storms or wars or something terrible and destructive, the Rudra principle is at work, the destructive principle that doesn't mean necessarily that Rudra, Lord Shiva, is personally present, but he is in one sense. But we won't say that some storm is directly Lord Shiva himself, but his formidable energy is manifesting in some small way, because a storm, even if a storm kills 200 people and it's something and wipes out a large area, to us it seems something very seems devastating, but that's only a tiny manifestation of the Rudra principle, because when Rudra really does his work, then the whole universe is destroyed and some little area of land and a few people is only a tiny manifestation of the Rudra principle. So when Srila Prabhupada said that I heard my guru speaking when this librarian told me to write books, it wasn't that Srila Prabhupada was going to pull out a tray and start doing guru puja. to this librarian, or even treat him in a manner any other than one would normally treat a librarian. But his guru manifested through that person. But in the true sense of the term, a guru is one who is clearly conscious of his own position as a servant of Krishna. Jodapi ama guru chaitanyara das. This verse here, just two verses before the one we're reading today, says he knows he's a servant of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So one who is very clearly fixed in that consciousness, and who in the service, and also very clearly understanding himself to be a servant, takes the position of a teacher to teach others. So the servant becomes a master. How? Out of service, on the order of his master. And the ultimate, so where does this end then? Is he a servant or master? Is he a servant or a master? He's a servant, but you know, you shouldn't see your guru as servant. You do, but not my servant. It's the servant of his servant. And it all goes back to Krishna, who is the ultimate master and the original guru also. The original teacher in that way. And the spiritual master is like a servant to his disciples. Srila Prabhupada comments here, just like the child cannot grow to manhood properly without the attention of the parents. So in the same way, the spiritual master oversees the disciples in such a way that they can grow and flourish in Krishna consciousness. So, guru means who is linked with the truth, and the truth flows through. And when the truth flows through, it may come from someone who's not even aware that they are doing so. But the guru principle is at work. And there's one anecdote that Satswarup Das Goswami, even before he was initiated, he asked one question to Swamiji, who was later to be known as Srila Prabhupada, because Steve, as he was known at that time, he was a fan of various writers, and maybe most of us were at some point before becoming a fan of a wholly different class of writers, beginning with Srila Prabhupada. That I know myself, I remember even now that I appreciated the writings of Steinbeck, and even George Orwell. I still quote him quite a lot, because not that he had any theological contribution whatsoever, or even tried to, but his insights on the human situation were quite apt. And Steinbeck also. I remember these two in particular. And then there's a... Well, anyway, I don't want to go into it all, but... Satsarup Maharaj, he found some truth in there. He found something of value in there. And what... Not that I'm not pretending to be a great student of Shakespeare, but I would... that Shakespeare's works are of lasting value, or in the mundane sense, or that they are appreciated, is because he had so many insights, and many of the things in Shakespeare's writings they've entered the English language. A rose would smell as sweet by any other name. It's it's not a Krishna conscious statement, but it is philosophical statement, of metaphysical statement. It's a profound statement. To do or not to do, that is the question. There is something rotten in the state of Denmark, and he has all these sayings which have become what is called immortal. They're not really immortal, but they've lasted a long time, because he has some insights on the human situation or the whole situation of the world. So Steve asked Swamiji that, what was the exact question he asked? Are these writers also God conscious? And Srila Prabhupada said, as much as they are sincere. So, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he also wrote about that many people may manifest some aspects of truth. And that's why we as Gauriyas, we don't have any problem quoting anyone. We can quote Shankaracharya, we can quote John Lennon, we can quote anyone. Not that we accept them as acharyas in the sense of that we accept their whole philosophy, but if they make some statement, we can that is in sync with the truth, then we can state it. Although we don't want to do that too much, because then it gives if we cite so many different sources, then it makes it seem as if we ourselves are being eclectic and that we don't have a solid knowledge system ourselves. So generally we quote Guru, Sadhu and Shastra. But occasionally we may quote some others also, because they have some insights. John Lennon said, living is easy with eyes closed. That's a good insight. Doesn't mean he was a self-realized acharya, but it's a good insight. Of course, he himself never had his eyes opened, or what his understanding. Well, he said that on the mundane platform, but we can apply that to the spiritual platform. He's applying that to things that, well, if you just don't see that the governments are cheating you, then it's easy to live peacefully. For instance, so I don't know exactly what context he made that statement in. I heard it in Parampara from Prithu Prabhu. So I don't know what context. I'm not going to investigate either what context John Lennon spoke it in. But we can apply that on the mundane platform and on the spiritual platform also. That it's we live in this world with our eyes closed, and it seems like living is easy, but we need to open our eyes and accept the challenge of rising above all that seems to be real in this world and come to the actual platform of reality. So, I wanted to contextualize that statement you made, that Guru is Guru for 2 seconds. In one sense, yes, but in the principle that you're speaking of, the Guru is a channel of truth. But then in the better or the fuller understanding is that Guru is one who consistently speaks the truth and acts according to the truth and lives according to the truth. So, you want to get back to me on that? No, all right. Anyone else? It's Guru Tattva is very big, very, very big topic. Very, very big topic. It becomes very easy to... Guru Tattva was very easy for us to understand when Srila Prabhupada was present. When we have to theoreticize about it, it becomes much... Is there such a word as theoreticize? And if not, I just made it up. Theorize, yeah, okay, that sounds better. Thank you. You're my guru. That's also true. The guru shouldn't think he can't learn from his disciples. So, yeah, it was so easy when Prabhupada... What is a guru? Prabhupada. It's easy, but it becomes more difficult to understand in the absence of Srila Prabhupada. There's also, if any of you read Sri Bhaktisiddhanta Vaibhav, there's a very... among the many, many touching anecdotes there is that of Siddhanta Saraswati, before he took sannyas, this from the earlier days when he was lecturing in Navadvip. And those days, people would go to listen to, even in India now, people go to listen to religious lectures. That culture is still there, despite the TV. Actually, it went down. When the TV became in every household, then the market for lectures, religious lectures, went down for some time. But then when people got fed up of the TV, then again, it's come up. So anyway, he was lecturing, I believe, at the Matri Mandir in wherever, in Navadvip, in Kulia. Actually, he would never call what we call the town of Navadvip, what is officially called, he would always refer to that as Kulia by its, because he didn't want to confuse that the town of Navadvip with the spirit, with the, anyway, that's another whole discussion. That's, so he was giving a lecture, and his lectures would be never less than 2 hours. I never saw any record of anything less than 2 hours. And 4 hours was common, 5 hours, 6 hours. People would sit and listen. They had that culture. So he was speaking on the qualities of Kanishtha Adhikaris, Madhyam Adhikaris, and Uttam Adhikaris. And he described in detail the Kanishtha Adhikari, then the Madhyam Adhikari, and then he said, and now Uttam Adhikari, but actually there's no need to discuss about this, because Gaurakishore Das Babaji Maharaj is living here, in among you, so you just go and see him, then you can understand what's an Uttam Adhikari. And he described that many years later in another lecture, he described that when I said, just as I said this, for some reason that unknown to myself, my head turned, although I hadn't throughout the whole 4 or 5 hours before, and I just saw out of the corner of my eye, Gaurakishore Das Babaji Maharaj, who'd been sitting in a corner where I couldn't see him, leaving the lecture. So, nice anecdote there. Because he didn't want to hear him praise of himself. He'd been listening to his disciples' lecture. So, Hare Krishna. Any question, please? Yeah.
Regarding the Gurukula, so apparently Gurukula traditionally would be...
Do one thing, please. Come a little closer.
And say into the...
So apparently in traditional India, Gurukula would be situated close to the village, clearly within a walking distance.
Yeah, let me just say something about that. That would be in traditional society. But then later, beginning maybe with Shankaracharya and his followers, that the then they became structures, actual building and institute, gurukuls as institutions. May have been before that in the Buddhist tradition also. The Buddhists also had monasteries, universities like that. Like so many other things, so much research is required. But the one Srila Prabhupada was asked, Basu Ghosh Prabhu told me, he heard, maybe he asked this to Srila Prabhupada himself, or he was present when someone asked, that someone was speaking about Vedic cultures in the village, and said, Prabhupada said, not in the village, in the forest. And that's also stated in the Shastra, that Even the village is considered in the mode of passion, but the forest is the mode of goodness. Please continue.
So I presume that the boys that were in the Gurukula were from the village, nearby village. So what was their connection with their parents?
What would be the connection with the parents? Well, they'd go every day and beg. Bhavati Bhiksham Dehi. They would see. Presumably they would see their parents regularly.
Am I wrong if I'm thinking that I read might have been in Manusmriti that the Brahmachari should not go back from his own parents?
Brahmachari may not, but I don't remember if seeing that, may not beg from his own parents. Well, let's see. When Vamanadeva was given his Upanayanam by Lord, he was the Upanayam ceremony was performed by Lord Brahma. Then Aditi, there were so many demigods. She gave him his first bhiksha. As far as I remember. But anyway, again, I'm not sure. It would have to be researched. And there may be different. There are general rules and there are specialized rules. And even among different brahmanas, there may be different rules that they follow. It's a very complex thing. Some brahmanas do some things in one way and then in another group in another area, or maybe in the same area, but there are different jati of brahmanas, they do it in a different way. It's not such a simple thing to understand all of this. It's actually very complex. Even if different groups do it in different ways, it wouldn't be arbitrary. They'd all have a reason for doing things differently.
I'm really curious to know the relationship of the boys with their parents. We know that familial ties are super strong. And would parents visit? Would they pamper him in any way?
Well, Srila Prabhupada used to say that the boys are sent away so that they don't have that. They're not with their parents. And a perennial problem in what's seen as a problem in our ISKCON Gurukuls has been when the boys go home or when the parents come, they just get the parents want to give them all 1 year sense gratification in two weeks. And I think Gurukul Maharaj told me it's like for every day they're away, it's like a week it takes to get them back in shape again once they come back. But in traditional cultures, were the boys pampered like that so much, spoiled in that respect?
I gave an extreme example, but I was thinking, would parents visit?
Would parents visit? I don't know. In the case of Krishna, he was sent from Mathura to Ujjain, and it's still an overnight train journey, so walking would take quite a considerable time. So presumably, of course, Krishna and Balaram they went through their course pretty quickly. They learned everything in 6 months. Which was not normal, but it requires more research, and it may not be the same in every instance. Also, that's also the probably who's done that research would be. I know that Vidyapurna Maharaj with his followers, and they did a lot of they went into. Not exactly hibernation, but they practically closed the Gurukul down for several years, and they did a lot of research and writing curriculum, and then again they opened it. So you could ask them or do your own research. I don't know, sorry, exactly what it is, all the details. It's a huge amount of research to be done in so many areas. philosophical, social, cultural, political, for setting up Varnashram society. And even then, after doing all of that, we also have to see how to apply it in the modern age, in differing circumstances throughout the world and different cultures. I mean, we really need truth conductors. We need people who are in contact with the Paramatma Samahitaha, people who are in contact, or they've reached the Paramatma, who can help us and guide us. And what we don't need is people who are charismatic and can fool people into thinking that they're in contact with the Paramatma, when in fact they're just in very strong contact with their own misconceptions, their own egoism. So we need a lot of mercy. There's a Gurukul in Tirumala, yeah.
They have like 8 years, not 12 years course, and I think parents visit them.
So parents visit, yeah.
And
whatever, yeah, you can see what they do. And they're mainly training archakas, what we call pujaris. And, well, at least externally, many of them have a very good level of culture. They all speak Sanskritam very well, and they know all the rituals. So they do their job. They generation after generation, there are archakas coming out of the Tirumala Gurukulam. I was at the installation of the deities at ISKCON Tirupati, and there's all the priests. There were TTD priests. They were talking among themselves in Sanskrit. That was very nice. This is nothing to do with the general discussion, but once, this was quite a few years ago, I was traveling around South India visiting various temples with a group of devotees. Among them was who calls himself Sanskrit Ananda. So practically everywhere he went, he'd be talking with the priests in Sanskrit. At least some of them knew Sanskrit. We wouldn't even know. People say Sanskrit's a dead language, but there are plenty of people who do speak it. One nice experience also I had in Udupi once. I was at the Samadhi of Madhvacharya, and one Madhva Brahmin came with his son. His son was about 5 years old, and he was talking to him, and he was talking with his son and telling him, bow down, and this is what you're doing. You're talking with him in Sanskrit, training him already at that age. And the Sanskrit college is there in Udupi, and they, so he presumably, I don't know, maybe he only spoke Sanskrit with his son. Maybe Tulu and Kannada also. But at that young age, they can learn practically any number of languages. So I'm told. One devotee, he's Slovenian. His wife is Russian, I believe. So their kid, from the beginning of life, they speak with him in three languages: Slovenian, Russian, and English. And they can learn without getting confused. When we all get confused if we speak more than one language, isn't it? We mix up the languages, and some of you say one word in one language and you're not sure which language it's supposed to be. Especially like for me, Bengali and Hindi, I'm not sure whether like that. But if they learn from a young age, they can speak different languages without that confusion. Just at your house, one of the attendees at that lecture, he's somewhat of a polyglot. He knows a few languages. So,
Jayananda.
His name is Jayananda.
Yeah.
He spoke to me in Bengali. Not very good Bengali, but Yeah.
He speaks Hindi.
A little bit, yeah. So he had this joke for me, which it was easy for me to get it. He said, what do you call a person who speaks two languages? Bilingual. Then he asked me, what do you call a person who speaks five languages? I said, polyglot. What do you call a person who speaks one language? And I got the answer, an American. So even materially, if we can train the kids at a young age, they can pick up so many things. So education is important. I'm not saying it's unimportant, it's just what you teach them. But even materially, languages are an asset, a lifelong asset. If you know a language, just like in school, I was in French class for 4 years, and I still can't put a sentence together in French because I had no interest. But it would have been, I don't like to think about it, but even if I hadn't been picked up by Srila Prabhupada from the gutta, then it would have been an asset, even material, and in Krishna consciousness would be an asset also, in a major language of the world. So some material education is also useful in Krishna service. And all our acharyas, they were Srila Prabhupada, of course, and Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. Those who acted as acharyas, as teachers, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Gaurakishore Das Babaji Maharaj didn't act as a teacher of the world, but those who did, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, also highly educated. And even prior to that, education, even for Vaishnavas, that meant Vedic education, means it's not all what we would call purely spiritual. The basic education there also includes Jyotish, which gives one knowledge of this world, of the universe, of mathematics. And Srila Prabhupada also, he would quote to us often the Chanakya Shlokas, which are worldly knowledge. And Srila Prabhupada had also been taught Hitopadesha at school, which is worldly knowledge, but if one is going to be a preacher of Krishna consciousness, you can't be solely in paramarthic topics, but rather he will know what we call mundane topics so that he can move among people in this world and bring them to the paramarthic, bring them to the spiritual level. So that's true. It's also required some. And if one is to be a preacher in any situation, there's different situations all over the world, just like I was just in Berlin, and in the course of a lecture I asked devotees, how many people here have heard of Baba Ramdev? It's big news in India at the present time. No one had heard of him. Who had heard of L.K. Advani? They hadn't heard of him. In India, if you don't know L.K. Advani and Baba Ramdev, then you don't know anything, because everyone knows who they are, what they are, what they stand for. So I had this experience once. I was in London, and I was speaking to a person at our temple, and he mentioned some name to me. I said, who? And he mentioned it again. I said, who? He said, the Prime Minister. I didn't know the name of the Prime Minister of Britain, and I was living in Britain. And the person thought I was stupid. And actually, I was, in that sense. I should have been enough in knowledge of current affairs that that when I speak with people about some matters that everyone knows, I should also know it. Otherwise, you appear to others as stupid. In a broader sense, I wasn't stupid. But if you don't know some basic things, then... And Prabhupada said that also. He said that in Gurukul, we should teach some basic geography and history and science so that people don't think our people are stupid. Hare Krishna. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. You want to ask something more?
So, Gurudev, one of the point in yesterday class was setting up of Gurukul and being an example as a first to the for the children's, like start with one's birth for the children. Yeah. Children. Yeah. So. Plural. Yeah. So my point was this whole ecosystem. So you know, I'll set the context earlier. Like, you know, I was born and raised in Allahabad. Then I've seen a lot of, you know, people, spiritual people around, and yeah, and a lot of disturbance in spirituality also. Yeah, and similarly, Banaras also had like old. Yeah, so when we saw ISKCON, so then it was a ray of light that, you know, dedicated people are there. You know, there is, you know, better than what we have been seen from the childhood. But as we are getting inside, you know, it is not just a single soul journey. Then when you are talking about being an example. It takes the whole ecosystem for cultivation around. So my, you know, even in the current context, rather than helping the kids, I see it's actually because it's like the mentality I see Guru Maharaj is that everyone around, or not everyone, most actually, are looking for serve me, rather than, you know, the idealism which is discussed about. And what I have seen is that is causing rather than progression for those who, you know, we desire, I see it going into a negative direction. So how to manage this kind of a situation? It's to maintain the motivation for oneself also. Like, there is one personal growth, and then second is the ecosystem, because you want to, you know, make that harmonious around.
Well, I have the same question. I'm not sure of the answer. It's a fact that if we see sannyasis, for instance, who are supposed to be the spiritual leaders and fully renounced, who they have, or we know, or we hear rumors of them having huge personal bank accounts, and they're not, for years and years, and they're not using the money for Krishna, then how are the grihasthas supposed to become, to develop a spirit of renunciation and giving everything to Krishna? I mean, that's just one instance. So that's a problem, isn't it? It's a problem. And why should someone want to dedicate their life as a brahmachari and give everything to promote a mission in which everything, we can do so if you feel confident that everything goes to Krishna. But if you don't, and that Krishna's mercy flows down, and it's the parampara, both, it goes, the mercy comes down, the service goes up, and it goes up to Krishna. But if we're not confident of that, then why should anyone want to dedicate? So yeah, it's a problem. And what's the answer? I like I say, I'm not sure of that either. I'm also in an existential crisis, because I joined a movement in which everything is very easy. You just give everything you have. Of course, we have so many material attachments and material desires, but we're confident if we dedicate ourselves here, then everything's clear, and we just serve, and the movement will spread, and other people will become Krishna conscious. But now we see that the ideals on which the movement was set up, they're still being talked about, but as you say, in many cases they're not practically followed. And what's gradually happening is that even the ideals, they're not being talked about. And the whole thing will just change. It's like a metamorphosis. again, going back to mundane there's a novel called Metamorphosis, which I haven't read, by Franz Kafka, who's famous in the English-speaking world more than in the... I believe he wrote in German, even though he's from Czech. So, anyway, the story is of a man, just an ordinary man, living at home with his family, who gradually turned into a giant insect. Strange story. But how the attitudes of everyone toward him gradually changed. He changed from being one thing to being something. He gradually changed into being something completely different. Completely different. That's what metamorphosis means, is complete change from one thing to another. Gradual change. So, yeah, that's what I see. I just looked at my email and there's something of this line, along this lines also. One lecture given by a very prominent member of our society in which saying that, well, even if Prabhupada said that, we have to judge by the... Prabhupada said such and such, but we're doing something different and it doesn't matter because we're getting a result. You have to judge by the result. The result is that many people like it and many people praise us and many people join us. So that proves that it's... Even if Prabhupada said not to do it, still we should do it. But that is... I don't subscribe to that philosophy at all. I'd rather say we should do what Prabhupada said. And if no one joins us, we should still continue doing what Prabhupada said. Otherwise, there's no me. What's the use? Then you come in the category, like I said, of Sri Sri and Amma and all these completely useless people who are... Practically, I think I'd rather die than join such people. I mean, it's death just to join those such people. It is anyway death. To take any inspiration from them.
Maybe even worse.
Worse than death, yeah.
Because that's the danger of an offense. Danger of an offense is that we become offensive towards that thing which liberates us. And because we have acquired that really unhealthy attitude, it is that attitude that is going to perpetuate the long distance between us and the liberator. Yeah. That's why any offenses to the holy name, to the Vaishnavas...
Yeah, this is turning into a long discussion. This idea that these people have more followers, so they're doing something right, and we don't have many followers, so we're doing something wrong. It's complete misunderstanding. It's not a numbers game. First, we understand what is the truth. Then we act according to that, and we try to bring people to that. If many come, very good. But we can't change the truth. But we can misrepresent it. And actually, in some way, those who are within ISKCON and are not actually representing Prabhupada, they're far more dangerous than any Sri Sri or something. I mean, the very fact that they're outside and they don't even pretend to be in any Vaishnava parampara makes them very clearly different. But those who are inside our movement and they're like Mata Hari or something. They're like spies or double agents. Very dangerous. Very, very dangerous. So,
Maharaj, in this context, like one of the lecturers mentioning, like this Sri Sri or these people, they're at least promoting the mode of goodness in the society, and to reach to the spirituality is...
You don't know what the mode of goodness is. Go back to and read your Bhagavad Gita. They're creating confusion and illusion. Sattvam sanjayate jnanam. From sattvagun comes knowledge, but these people are promoting ignorance. Not any knowledge. You mean that because some of their followers are vegetarian? Well, Buddhists are supposed to be vegetarian, but even the vegetarian ones, the basic ethos they have is one of very deep tamagun, because they deny the existence of the Atma. So you could say maybe it's tamasic with a some ring of sattva, but it's not sattvagun. First, see what the philosophy is before you say it's sattvic.
That's again same danger, seems like, that because people approach them for God realization, something spiritual, and then in the name of that which is supposed to be spiritual, they feed poison. Super dangerous. I mean, better nothing.
Yes, Guru Maharaj, I just had one question. Especially considering the topic of false gurus, how can we understand whether some instruction is Maya or is Guru speaking to us? Is it a matter of intelligence and intuition from Paramatma? How can we understand it? Who's speaking?
Well, we have Guru, Sadhu and Shastra. We're supposed to be trained in that. And there's our own sincerity. Also, there are many people in this country who regularly have conversations with Jesus. So they tell us. It's their imagination. They're convinced, but we can't take that seriously. So yeah, one has to be Guru, Sadhu and Shastra, and one's sincerity will be there also.
I think Dimitri Kuru was just saying, like, Srila Prabhupada's quote, boil the milk, so you can thin milk by adding water and you can make it thick by boiling.
Boil the milk, yeah. There's not enough milk for everyone. No problem. You only have 1 liter of milk. No problem. We can just give us 2-3 minutes and we can make it into a gallon. No problem. That will increase people's capacity for passing urine. That's all. More. We want more.
Like recently, I read in Dandavat Smara, they are promoting this Hey Krishna. And another side, the same Reliance group is selling beef in India, Maharaj. Like, yeah, they have a Reliance Hey Krishna movie. They recently... we are promoting it. They say it's based off Krishna book, and the same Reliance group where they sell stores, they in the Reliance grocery stores, Maharaj, they have all over India, like the fresh vegetables. They sell beef in the shops. So I personally saw when I went last time to India.
Reliance Fresh,
and it's there in Bangalore and all other cities. So they sell in, like, it's from their shops. It is a storage, like I think can beef or something like that. So they are promoting that, and now we have this, and I just confused why we are supporting them.
I don't have any answer for that. I'm also confused. Confused means, well, what can we say? Maya is very strong. But even this whole idea of cartoons of Krishna, I'm not in favor of that at all. It's cheapens. It's very cheap. Krishna is not a cartoon figure. Don't make it so cheap. So I think we'll finish there now. Hare Krishna.
Yeah, already.